All right, welcome back. We're on a Friday, but more importantly, the day after, the night before, and the day before Game 2 between the Avalanche and the Flames. Let's head right down our guest hotline, brought to you by our good friends at the Grey Eagle Resort and Casino. We say hello to James Myrtle live in Beantown. How's Boston today, James?
Boston is, I think they're still recovering. They're still licking their wounds from what happened yesterday here.
Fair enough. And you know what? Through 2 days, home teams, favorites, 4-4. Now, maybe you could convince me that the Islanders weren't favorites, but that means 4 out of 8 markets where you think you're got a good chance of winning. Home ice has been stolen, and all of a sudden, a little bit of the anxiety going on. What went right for Toronto in Game 1, and what would give Bruins fans confidence that they can saw this thing off tonight?
Oh, man. Boy. What went right? Almost everything. I mean, the Leafs, basically, they allow, they take a penalty. They allow a brutal power play goal against 10 minutes into the game. Marchand finds Bergeron, and I think everybody that watched last year's series said, oh, here we go again. But then the rest of the game, the final 50 minutes was, a lot of it was a Mitch Marner show. Scored 2 highlight reel goals. Kadri finds Nylander, puts him out on a breakaway, scores again. And it was all Leafs for the second half of the game. And I would say that's probably one of the best games the Leafs have played all season. And certainly one of their best games since late December, when they've had a losing record. And, it really looked like they were able to flip a switch from their doldrums through February and March.
Yeah, and that's what we talked about a bunch in our last couple of months of our weekly visits, is just, not a lot to play for, not a lot of inspired play, things that seemed like, constants, like Freddie Anderson's goaltending all of a sudden went away. What did Mike Babcock attribute the clicking of the switch to last night? 2 nights ago.
Just getting dialed in, and I wouldn't be, maybe he attributes to listening to him finally. Maybe that's what, I had to laugh, and Nazem Kadri after the game, he basically said, what you're talking about is that it was hard when we didn't have anything to play for. Like, to paraphrase him, basically they knew they were going to play the Bruins and, December or January, and what exactly were they battling for the last 20 games of the season? They've been waiting, and it showed. The team really, really showed up last night against Boston. And I've covered, this is the third series I've covered Leafs Bruins. That was the 9th game I've covered with the Leafs in Boston playing against the Bruins. That's by far the best they've ever played here out of those 9 games that I've seen. So maybe that's a sign that things are changing, and maybe the Leafs aren't the underdog anymore.
And of course, you did your part by writing a column suggesting why the Bruins would win the series. Now, look, there's a lot of reasons to believe that, and it's 1 game in. This is the smallest of sample sizes, but hey, anything you can do to help, right? The Myrtle curse, let's make it a thing.
Well, I picked the Leafs last year, and they lost. They blew a lead. They blew a lead in the third period of Game 7, so I thought, took a lot of heat for that. They've played terribly the last 3 months of the season. I'm not picking these guys again. They're not going to do it. And then, they come out and they made Zdeno Chara look, like he was 52 years old, not 42 years old last night.
What other series have you had your eyes affixed to? Obviously we're all catching as much as we can, but you're on the road and certain timing. I don't imagine as soon as that Bruins game ends that you can watch the Calgary-Colorado game in its entirety, but some series on off nights you might be dialed in a little more. What's caught your eye thus far? Because I've been immensely entertained through the first 8 games. The only one I didn't see a moment of was Carolina and Washington last night. The other 7 series, I feel like I've got a good feel for how Game 1 went and the energy, and it's been real good hockey, I've thought.
That's one of the shames of covering a series, is that I haven't seen a minute of Washington, Carolina, or Calgary, Colorado. You'd have to fill me in, but on the off day, absolutely. We were out for dinner in Boston here the day before Game 1, and we were in a bar. It's known as Sean Thornton's Bar here in Boston, and it's a wonderful hockey bar. It's called the Ironside Grill. If you ever come to Boston, check it out. But with all the games going on at the same time and all the screens, we were able to watch a lot of it. And the one that really captured our viewing was Tampa and Columbus, because, you know, we go into the establishment and I think it was 2-0 already early in the game, and then it's 3-0 early, and, you know, all the jokes are going around the table like, Tampa's going to win this one in 3, and they're going to have a long wait for the next team. And then, you know, you sit there and you watch, and full credit to the Blue Jackets for just pushing and pushing and coming back. And if that series ends up going long, it'll be really, really interesting. You know, and I had an executive around the league say, you know what, that Columbus is going to make it interesting before the series. And they've got the pieces there. You know, it's not, there's not really any pushover teams in the playoffs this year. I mean, maybe at the bottom of the West, maybe. But, you know, the East, teams 2 through 8, you know, everybody's between like 108 and 100 points. It's close.
Yeah, and I'll say this, even Colorado, they come in hot, and okay, they get shut out 4-0 last night, but Mike Smith's the story, and that's usually not a thing if the goalie didn't have to make some big plays, and he was sensational, which means Colorado had their chances to score, and that was, you know, a late goal and an empty netter. That absolutely, with a poor goaltending performance, or even a mediocre one, might be a Colorado victory. So I'm with you. I always think heading into the postseason, even the lowest of seeds have a chance, because this sport is just so unpredictable. Yeah. And a best of 7 with injuries and a hot goaltender, I mean, that can swing probabilities a bunch.
Yeah, so the Lightning, I mean, they lose the first game the way they did at home. Think about the amount of pressure that's going to be on that team. I mean, you know, 130-point regular season, and everyone, you know, I saw people picking them to win in 4 or 5 games, almost everybody. And, you know, they got to win game 2 now, right? Otherwise, you're going back to Columbus. And it's a good story, too, for the Blue Jackets, especially if they can make this a long series, just because, you know, there's a franchise that's been around since 2000 and has never won a playoff round. Imagine if this is the one they win.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of good fans there. I've spent a lot of time in Columbus, and I'm really impressed. And they need something. They need some hope to cheer for there.
Yeah, and look, like, it's the chips in move, and you'd think Tampa's in trouble if they go down 0-2, but they also went down 0-2 to Washington last year and stormed back and won 3 in a row, only to watch the Caps win game 6 and 7. I mean, this is the beauty of a best of 7. We feel like we have these storylines early, and then we have no idea. It's like Space Mountain, if you've ever been to Disneyland. Am I going left, right, up, down? You can't see ahead. It's the storylines will change for sure. And even watching that Tampa game, they get up 3-0. A lot of people would have changed channels. And it's like, what? That's a game now? Like, I was already thinking, man, how could I pick that to be a long series? Tampa's annihilating them, and then sure enough, you know, we get giggling torts talking about BO postgame. I mean, that is the beauty of this sport's postseason. Have you seen much of Winnipeg St. Louis? Because that to me is one that feels coin toss.
Those were kind of running simultaneously, right? So when Tampa Columbus looked like it was out of hand, then we flipped over to Winnipeg and St. Louis. And, you know, as long as the kid in goal for the Blues, Binnington, as long as he plays well, I think they're going to win that series. And I mean, maybe that's an easier prediction after they win. The Jets had a really tough second half. I mean, you talk to anyone that looks at the underlying numbers and the analytics and stuff, they were right near the bottom of the league. And, you know, some of that you're missing Bufflin and you're missing Morrissey on the back end, but it just feels like they don't have the depth that they had last year when they had that run. And it just feels like it's not their year. And, you know, to an extent, the Jets are, and it's not going to get any easier. They look like a team that the Caps had a big impact on. And then now, you know, you're going to have to pay Laine, you're going to have to pay Kyle Connor and Trouba, and you know, it's tough when the Leafs are gonna have to battle this as well, and I'm sure Calgary's gonna run up against it at some point too with all the young guys that they've got. Is that, you know, if you don't actually have the success and don't actually win, you know, it's one thing if you're Chicago or Pittsburgh or whatever and you get capped out and you gotta trade guys out, but if you're a team that hasn't gotten it done. Like, imagine Tampa loses in the first round, and then they're going to have to trade a bunch of guys to fit, you know, Braden Point's deal under, and that's a bitter pill to have to swallow.
So let's stay with Winnipeg. I believe it's the last year of Paul Maurice's deal, which has not really been a story because they've looked like such a, you know, a good team on paper that could make a run. Would a first-round exit conceivably lead us to a spot where they could be mulling his future with the club rather than just re-upping him? Because, you know, I wasn't his biggest fan early, and I don't know if you were in Toronto when he was there or not, but he's a guy that the longer he's been around the league, the more you learn about him, and people rave about the human, the teacher, how thoughtful he is. He's reading, like, you know, 40 books a year or whatever. Like, interesting cat that has had a lot of success and groomed players well, but could you conceivably see that coming to an end if they bow out early?
I don't think so, but the fact that, and I'm relying on your information here because I haven't actually paid attention to this, the fact that he doesn't have an extension, I mean, that says that normally when a coach gets to the point where they haven't extended them, it says at least a little bit. Paul Maurice was in Toronto a long time ago. I mean, I've covered the Leafs 11 years, and he was there right before that. I started right around when Ron Wilson started. But I think that Paul Maurice was an underrated coach in the NHL for a long period of time, because one of the things I've done in this job covering the Leafs as long as I have is, you know, gone back and looked at the history and looked at some of the underlying numbers for those teams and looked at what went right and looked at what went wrong. And I think that a lot of that is really favorable to Paul Maurice. I mean, he had brutal goaltending when he was coaching the Leafs. And I think that if he didn't, I think he could have coached some of those weak Toronto teams into the playoffs just right after the cap came in. So I think he's a good coach. I think he's a bright man. I think he's a very personable guy. I think people in Winnipeg love him. And I don't think that the issues that they're having this year are necessarily coach related.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, it's, you know, Cap Friendly's doing all they can with coaches' contracts. He's listed as an unknown salary, and it's the last year of his deal. So that's what I'm going off of. Who knows what's there? It's not exactly the PA where everything's published, that's for sure. Last one for you. There's a lot of good Toronto tie-ins with the New York Islanders this year. Lou Lamoriello goes over as the general manager. They lose John Tavares. And then, of course, anyone covering the sport clearly familiar with Barry Trotz's run to a Stanley Cup championship and then a thanks but no thanks from the Capitals on an extension. Just a thought on the Islanders season and what's occurred there, whether this thing could get beyond round one. It really, no one has seen this coming. They feel like this year's Cinderella.
I think they could beat Pittsburgh for sure. I mean, I picked the Penguins, but just, I mean, you look at that team and you look at that roster, and like, there were a lot of people picking the Islanders to be bottom five. And yeah, I remember Tyler Dello, who wrote for us at The Athletic for a while, and who's just been hired by the New Jersey Devils, he said prior to the season that don't sleep on the Islanders. And I thought, yeah, okay, whatever, like some weird analytics reason or whatever. But he ended up being right that there's more talent there than people realize. And I think that potentially the Islanders are going to be in tough because they signed, you know, they signed Leo Komarov to a four-year deal, and they got Matt Martin, and they got, you know, some of the tough guys and some of the depth defensemen that they've got signed long term. There's some bad contracts there, to be honest with you. So, you know, Lou Lamoriello's going to have to be the bag man again and make some of those things disappear the way he did in Toronto. But, you know, I wouldn't bet against Robin Lehner right now, and I wouldn't bet against Matt Barzal, who's one of the most impressive young players in the league and a BC boy, which, so, you know, I got to root for him. So I think if the Islanders, the Islanders do go on a run, it's a feel-good story, and there's a fan base that needs one of those as well.
No question. Hey, enjoy tonight, and I guess, what, you going back to the same sports bar? You got to go to Scott Thornton's and
no,
get all the four-game show?
Sure. Sportsnet's own John McKenzie is known as the Chef de Michonne, and he has found some, I don't know, shishi restaurant that is hard to get a reservation to. And I think the reservation is like 9 o'clock at night or something ridiculous, so I'm getting dragged out to some millennial thing that they're taking the old man Myrtle on. So it'll be interesting.
All right, buddy. Have fun. See you later.
All right. Bye, Ryan.